Hello, I'm Charmian Gooch, one of three founders of Global Witness, and welcome, and thank you all very much for coming today. I'd also like to thank President Jagdeo for making the effort and for being very willing to come and take part in this discussion and the question and answer session, and also to the whole group of speakers as well. I'd also like to thank the law firm Lawrence Graham, who very kindly and generously thrown open their doors to us. This isn't our office, we're just borrowing it for an hour or two. So in the last 15 years, Global Witness has done a lot of work on forests, on illegal logging and natural resource corruption, alongside other work that we've been doing on conflict resources. We see RED as potentially one of the best ways to prevent deforestation and degradation if it is done right and done well, and probably disastrous if not done right. Our interest on this focuses on three areas, really, which are forest management, rights of forest-dependent peoples, and good governance. And today, and going forward, our question is really, can Guyana deal with these very real challenges to ensure that RED is actually going to save its forests and to deliver? And for that reason, this event, especially the second part, is very focused on questions and answers. And we really need this to help us all understand more about some of the challenges that RED in Guyana and Guyana face on this. It's very much a front-running initiative. It's likely to be the first to actually get off the ground, and as such is, of course, going to be under a lot of scrutiny, not just from NGOs, but from everybody else. And it's going to carry the burden of being the groundbreaker on this. We think this event is very timely for a number of reasons. The signing last week between Norway and Guyana of the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding. Also, the IIED have just concluded their review and report, and I'm going to have to read this bit completely, on the low carbon development strategy consultation process in Guyana. And Duncan McQueen from IIED is here today, and he's going to talk a bit more about this. It's also, of course, even more timely because Copenhagen is just over 2.5 short weeks away. So, and RED and Copenhagen, it does seem that RED may have some chance, even if the rest of Copenhagen looks like a bit of a failure at the moment. In about a minute or two, I'm going to hand over to Jo Andrews. She is the former ITN senior political correspondent and is now head of Ariadne, which is the European Human Rights Funders Network. She's going to introduce the speakers and moderate the session. There's going to be about an hour for questions, perhaps slightly less, but we're going to do our best to really maximise the time for questions, because this is so important and it's such a good opportunity to really hear more about RED and to ask some of those difficult questions about its strengths and its weaknesses. Now, the importance of this means that we've tried really hard to give an opportunity to Guyanese people working on this issue who can't be here and who aren't here. And so we've actually had about 20 very detailed long questions emailed through, and we've had to inevitably reduce those down to a handful of questions, and we've asked GW staff to ask those questions on behalf of the authors, who will of course be identified for each question. We're also going to be filming this, so there's a camera here, and we're going to be putting this up on our website for anyone to have a look at and everyone to have a look at by, we hope, about 9 o'clock this evening. And then we're also taking a transcription, and as soon as it's humanly possible, we will be putting that up on the website too. And I'd like to hand over to Jo.
Thank you very much, Charmian. I thought it was worth reminding ourselves, before I introduced everybody on the panel, what's at stake here. Guyana lies at the heart of the Guyana Shield, and it's one of only four intact rainforests that still remain on the face of the planet. 85% of the country is forested. That's 18 million hectares. And Guyana is, as Charmian said, on the brink of becoming the first country in the world to sign a RED agreement. It's already signed a bilateral agreement with Norway, which will see it become the recipient of up to $250 million in compensation for lost development opportunities from potential deforestation over the next 10 years. President Jagdeo is here to explain to us how that's going to work and to open himself, unusually for democratically elected presidents, to the scrutiny and questions of this audience. Beside him is Yvonne Pearson, who is Toshao Pearson. She is the chair of the elected chair of Guyana's National Toshao's Council, which is made up of the country's indigenous leaders. And I think I'm right in saying she comes from the Arawak clan. Is that correct?
Arawak.
Forgive my pronunciation. On my other side, I have Dr. Rosalind Reeve, who's the Forest Campaigns Manager from Global Witness. And at the end, Duncan McQueen, who was the leader of the consultant observer team that took part in monitoring the process of consultation that was involved in drawing up the low-carbon development strategy. And he's from IIED. The format of this is that I'm going to ask each of the four people here, starting with President Jagdeo, to actually present to you for a maximum of 10 minutes, and nobody here will mind if it's slightly shorter, on their view of how this will work. And after that, we'll throw it open to questions. And forgive me if I identify you by your clothing or something else that I can see, because I don't know all of your names. President Jagdeo, can I hand over to you?
Sure. Well, thank you very much. Would you prefer me speaking from here?
Where, you can speak from wherever you like.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. First of all, I wish to thank Global Witness for arranging this event. I thought that people from the NGO community often don't get a chance to put vigorous questions to heads of state and to put us on the hot seat. So I offered Global Witness to come and do this, and I'm thankful that you're all here. And I'm going to be very short because I'm hoping that I can be much more pointed in my answers to questions that you may have. I don't want to make a speech that you may not be particularly interested in. I'm asked to speak about governance and transparency, but before I speak about the forest, let me tell you, just spend a minute telling you a bit about my country. We gained independence from the UK in 1966. And since that time, until 1992, we didn't have any democratic elections. It was only in 1992, after the involvement of President Carter particularly, that we saw a return to democracy. In that period, we lost a significant part of our population, the best minds. They migrated to the US, in particular, US and Canada. We ran up the one of the highest per capita debt in the world. We lived above our means for a very long time. So by the time we got into office in 1992, we were using 94% of revenue to service debt, 20% of revenue to pay wages and salaries in the public service. So when you pay debt and wages and salaries, that was 114% of revenue. We have true, and I've seen the power of NGOs, and I must digress a bit here. In the late 1990s, I came here, I went to Birmingham with Anne Pettifor and some others when they started the Jubilee movement. And I saw how the power of the NGOs made a big difference in getting multilateral debt relief on the agenda of the G7 at that time. And so we got quite a bit written off. We paid back $1.5 billion. In the first 14 years of our structural adjustment policies, we paid back more in debt servicing than we receive in loans and grants from abroad. We practically financed our structural adjustment program. Today, our debt stock now has reduced from 750% of GDP to about 45% of GDP. We're using 4% of revenue to service debt, down from 94%. We didn't have audited statements for the country, since we're talking about governance and transparency. For 10 years prior to the assumption of office, every single year from 1992, we have had audited accounts for the country tabled in the National Assembly. We recently had constitutional reform. We strengthened those provisions. Now the audit office reports directly to a committee chaired by the opposition in the National Assembly. There are many other governance features there, but I don't want to spend time on those, including five constitutional commissions that are called the Rights Commission on Indigenous People, Rights of Children, Gender, Human Rights and Ethnic Relations, because of our peculiarities. Very few constitutions in the world have constitutional commissions enshrined in them that have powers of sanction over the executive. and but that's for another moment. What there, in my interaction over the past several years on the whole issue of RED, first of all, I made this offer to work with Tony Blair to say that we are prepared to deploy our entire rainforest if the right incentives could be found, deploy it in service of climate change. We didn't get much of a response, then I raised it with the current government. They were pretty lukewarm, and I hope I'm not saying anything politically incorrect because it's the truth. And more recently, we found a really good partner with Norway. But we thought that we, preserving the rainforest and growing our country, that is ensuring our people prosper, do not have to compete with each other, that they can be compatible and they can be structured in a single strategy for the country, hence our low carbon development strategy. What there's this agreement, and I'm going to jump straight to the agreement with Norway. But before I do this, I met two groups of people since the last 3 years, particularly from the NGO communities. Those who recognize the importance of rainforests as part of the solution to climate change, who recognize that it's going to be difficult to get a RED agreement in place, but who are prepared to work for that agreement. And then there's another group who can only find everything wrong with RED and why it can't work. So there are two groups of people I've had. The most common things there that keep coming up are, will the money be well spent? Can the countries really deliver on the promises? Will this be real? Would they not take our money and then cut down the trees? Would some corrupt government run off with the money? These are questions that have been out there and that are real questions, real concerns. So in our agreement with Norway, I think we have sought to answer all of these concerns. First of all, we have a national scale model because we're talking about the entire rainforest in Ghana. We're not talking about a small pilot in some country where you can have extremely good practices within the pilot area and the rest of the country or the rest of the forest could be degraded or denuded. Secondly, we're talking about payments based on performance. Thirdly, we're talking about a rigorous system for measuring performance. That is a MRV system, a world-class MRV system, the development and deployment of that system. Fourthly, we're talking about we've defined in this agreement a transparent, accountable financial transfer mechanism that could be audited and could withstand international and local scrutiny. Fifthly, I may be losing count, we're speaking about institutionalization here of a multi-stakeholder participation in the development of our RED strategy and throughout its implementation. Sixthly, we're talking about safeguarding indigenous people's rights, making sure that if they obtain with their lands, they do so only with their free, prior, informed consent. And even if they don't obtain, they still benefit from the resources that the country can garner through the state forest, that their land rights and other traditional rights would be protected. These are some of the issues that I've heard most often. We're going to have international monitors on the ground to look at all of these phases to see that they comply with some international standard. So I think this model, the agreement that we signed with Norway can give answers. It may not be a perfect agreement because we're still all learning. And as every was pointed out, this is the first such agreement in the world. And it may evolve over time, but it seeks to answer all the issues that have been raised about RED in the past. So I just stop there. Thank you.
Thank you. Tashar Pearson, can I ask you what you think of the agreement, and is it going to work, and is it something that's going to deliver benefits for your people?
Thank you. First of all, I wish to take this opportunity to say that I feel very privileged to be here and to have my input. Yes, we believe about the agreement. We believe it can work, and things can only work when all the stakeholders participate and have knowledge of what is happening. So we believe it can work. We believe the indigenous peoples in Guyana have a very important role to play. We have been participating in all the discussions, and we have been talking, and we're getting ourselves to better understand what is happening. My being here today tells that the indigenous peoples are really participating in the policies of Guyana. There are much more that I can tell you about the indigenous people's participation and how we hope to benefit and how we know we will benefit some.
Thank you very much indeed. Rosalind, can I turn to you and ask you what your reaction is?
I need to go up there, actually.
Off you go.
First of all, I want to thank President Jagdeo and Yvonne Pearson for being here and for being prepared to engage with us in this open way. I think it's very encouraging. And secondly, I wanted to actually respond when you said you see NGOs in two camps. It's, you know, some see the opportunities, some see the risks. I think clarify where Global Witness stands on this. I think we see both, okay? And we do see it as an opportunity. We also see the risks. And so what we're trying to do is address some of those risks early on and in the work that we're doing. We were in Washington at a dialogue meeting about three or four weeks ago that Chatham House held with WRI and RRI. And at the end, a question was asked, who in the audience sees RED as an opportunity and, you know, put their hand up? Who sees it as a risk? Put their hand up. I actually wasn't sure. I think you were there, Alison, remember? And I actually wasn't quite sure which to do, you know? And in the end, some people actually put both hands up, you know? And I think that sort of really sums up how we perhaps see RED. And but I wanted to start off, I wanted to address actually two issues. One is governance and one is monitoring. And these are two issues that are key for Global Witness. And I'm starting with a slide here, which is on illegal logging, just to give some example of where the different countries stand, as in 2007, on the issue of illegal logging. And these pie charts show total timber production, and that's the whole pie. And then the white part is legal timber production, and the red part is the proportion of timber produced in 2007, which was considered illegal. And as you can see, you know, Guyana there, it's not the worst, okay? In fact, I think PNG takes the prize, you know, and out of all the countries there, that's Papua New Guinea. But the level of illegal logging is significant and is of concern. So that was one issue that we wanted to flag. Moving on to issues of governance more generally, it was actually this meeting on governance and RED a few weeks ago that got us thinking about this. Someone pointed out these COFACE risk ratings. Now, COFACE is a French export credit agency, and it supports business operating in high-risk markets, and it assesses sovereign risk and assigns ratings to these countries. And there are two types of ratings, country ratings and business climate ratings. So this is purely something for the private sector, right? And there are seven levels within the ratings. They run from A1 through to D. And I looked at the red countries to see where they fitted in this spectrum and found that actually all of them fall in the bottom the bottom set of categories from A4 right through to D. And if and to give an example, A4 were the best. And so an example from the indicators, essentially the institutional framework has shortcomings. They are acceptable but occasionally unstable business environments. So that's the sort of the best environment that you're talking about in terms of the countries engaging in red. And a D country was described as a high risk political and economic situation. Business environment was very difficult, and the institutional framework has serious weaknesses. So then we looked at some of the red countries, and this is where I wanted to raise the issue of governance and really ask how, you know, this is going to be addressed in Guyana, and actually not only Guyana but other countries that are engaging in this process. Because if you look, I've highlighted the top, where we have Brazil, Panama, and Mexico, and I think everybody knows that even in those countries that there are problems. And then at the bottom, Cambodia, CAR, Democratic Republic of Congo, and Guyana all came out as DD in these risk ratings in business climate and sovereign risk. So I just wanted to raise that as an issue that perhaps needs to be addressed. So how do we see some risks to red? And I think one the president raised already, corruption. One, I think that there's a spectre of this, which perhaps people aren't addressing, but we're going to need to address down the road, and it's what we're calling carbon crime. Two types of this, the sort of the type, what we call carbon cowboys, so people who are going around with, you know, fraudulent certificates, and, you know, there's been a little bit of this happening already in Brazil and Papua New Guinea. But later down the road, we may have to address the involvement of organized crime. And I think these are the issues that really haven't been thought about enough yet. And what about monitoring? Well, we think that, well, I was very happy to hear that that Guyana, and I do know that Guyana's been developing quite a rigorous framework for MRV, that's measurement, reporting, and verification. But I do think, and this is not just a question of Guyana now. I think this is more generally within the red discussion. There's been a real focus on carbon, so the measurement of emissions and removals. And why I've actually taken this, I took it from someone else's slide, in fact. It was who's on MRV, but I think all the focus has been on the M of carbon, so the measurement of carbon to date. Okay. Little focus on the reporting, very little focus on verification, and which is where a lot of us think, you know, the rubber will hit the road. And there's been not a lot of attention to date paid to how we're going to monitor issues of governance, social issues and impacts, environmental integrity, the drivers of deforestation. Now, I think these issues are now actually being addressed in the FCPF. And we're seeing progress there. UN Red has been raising these issues for quite some time, but it's actually not being reflected in the wider negotiations. A few weeks ago, when we were in Washington for the Forest Carbon Partnership Facility meeting, and James, who's sitting in the front row, presented Guyana's proposal on MRV, you could see that, I mean, we had felt up until that point that there had been a lot of focus on the carbon, it had been on measuring the carbon, and that these other issues, what we call elements beyond carbon, hadn't been addressed. But clearly that thinking it's changing, was our perception, and we welcomed that because we saw some elements in there which were looking at a broader monitoring system. But I think I highlighted two issues perhaps which still need to be thought about, and that is how will governance issues be addressed in a monitoring system, and how will social impacts be monitored as well. So those are two more issues. Now, this slide might be a slightly strange slide to finish with, but I want to say that this slide illustrates, I think, what we don't want in red, okay? And this is actually, I took this from a presentation. It was at a UN Red Side event in Barcelona just the week before last. And the slide before this was the DRC, a before and after. And the Democratic Republic of Congo was identified as the country. And then they went on, the presenter went on to this slide and didn't identify which country this was. All he said was that it was not a developing country and didn't name it. And so I asked, well, which country was it? Because if you're prepared to name the DRC, why, if this isn't a developing country, then, you know, it's obviously an Annex One or a developed country. So there's a transparency issue here. So which country is it? And the presenter said that he actually couldn't say. and so then afterwards, someone told me, well, this is actually Quebec, and this is Canada. Okay, so this was Quebec in 1991 on the left. This is Quebec in 2002 on the right. And I would say, you know, this is actually what we wouldn't want to see in red. But, so saying, I think in terms of, you know, so there's an issue of transparency here, and I'm saying that it's, you know, it's in developed countries as well as developing countries. And I do think that Guyana is showing a way forward as far as this is concerned, as far as transparency issues are concerned. And I think that definitely we have a good start, but there's a long way to go. I also think, you know, finally, that for the last year, a lot of us who've been involved in RED have been engaged in what I would call the RED rush. I mean, it's been a manic agenda, and I think it's actually unprecedented. And I think it's probably after Copenhagen, it's not going to slow down that much, but I think we do need to take time to develop the standards necessary and address the issues that we think have been falling between the cracks until now. And think one issue is governance, and I think another issue is monitoring beyond carbon. And I think, you know, we have an opportunity here for Guyana to show the way on this, and it would be very encouraging if they could. And I would like to thank you and thank the President for coming. And turn this off.
Duncan, do you want to sit down or do you want to? Right, okay.
Thanks, good afternoon. My name is Duncan McQueen from the International Institute for Environment and Development. I've been asked to talk this afternoon on an independent review of the consultation process that Guyana undertook in order to review and revise its low carbon development strategy. I'm going to talk about the process. I'm going to talk about what that process added, and I'm going to talk about some shortcomings, and then I'm going to give you a few conclusions. The process of consultation coincided with the launch of the Low Carbon Development Strategy on the 8th of June. It was a 3-month initial consultation process. We helped to develop some best practice indicators based on prior work with National Forest Programs, the FLEGT initiative, Accountability International's standards on consultation, and so on. We developed some principles which the government of Guyana put forward and we endorsed as best practice. Transparency, inclusivity, a number of other indicators. At the end of the consultation process, we did an independent review of people who'd taken part in those consultations, and they scored them from all different stakeholder groups. So transparency scored between 1 and 10, scored an 8. Inclusivity, 8. Information and timeliness, 6. Representation, 8. Flexibility, 7. Clarity, 7. Accountability, 7. Continuity, yet to be decided. Gives you a flavour of what people thought independently of that consultation process. What was the process? Well, it involved a massive publicity outreach through independent television, all different radio channels, a dedicated low carbon development strategy website, a jingle, published a question and answer document, information packs. It involved independent oversight through a multi-stakeholder steering committee that comprised Amerindian groups, civil society organizations, private sector representatives, that really determined the process of the consultations. It was built around 15 subnational consultations, primarily directed at Amerindian areas, indigenous areas. These were held in the 10 regions of the country between June the 19th and the 7th of July. And another 30 awareness sessions with specific stakeholder groups from industry, labor, private sector, civil society, indigenous peoples, women and youth. The low carbon development strategy was debated in the newly constituted National Tsavo's Council, which comprises 174 elected members from all Amerindian communities in all regions of the country. There was significant free press coverage in all major newspapers, both for and against the low carbon development strategy. We commissioned David James, an indigenous lawyer, to conduct an assessment of how the consultation process fitted with free prior informed consent. And he came back with a broadly positive view, both of what had happened and of the precedent it set. There was a comprehensive analysis of the main points raised in these sessions by the government of Guyana, and we contributed our own independent assessment of that. So that was the process. What did it add? Well, I think the measure of any consultation process is what it adds to what's originally there in the low carbon development strategy. And so there were calls for a more comprehensive look at broader low carbon energy sources, especially solar power, but also including wind and micro hydro. There was a call for greater emphasis to the diversification of agriculture and other income generating opportunities, particularly in the interior. There was a call for careful attention to improving the sustainability of forest management in Guyana to independent forest monitoring. There was a call for curbing unsustainable and uncontrolled forestry with a more explicit, more stringent control and enforcement, including of smaller operators, chainsaw loggers. There was a call for reforestation activities as a specific activity, an acknowledgement that ecotourism was an important engine for wealth creation in a low-carbon economy. They wanted increasing monitoring and enforcement of more stringent international standards on mining, low-cost financing to allow small miners to gain access to mercury-free technology and modern excavators. There was a call for the resolution of outstanding titling of Amerindian lands, the recognition of historic stewardship role of indigenous peoples, including a recognition of the carbon neutral nature of traditional rotational agriculture. There was emphasis on building up youth capacity to conduct green business. And there was emphasis of the need for an oversight mechanism of the financial flows coming in from RED to Guyana. These things were additional to the many things already in the low carbon development strategy, and I've highlighted them to show you that there were some substantive points put forward. In terms of the perceived main shortcomings, you can read all about this in this document. There are some copies, I think, left at the back. You can get them from the IID website. The main shortcomings, from the independent team's point of view, were the non-engagement in the consultation process on the ground by the opposition members of parliament and opposition political parties. That was a major constraint to the development of the LCDS. There were constraints in logistics in getting the documents, the LCDS documents, out to the public with sufficient time beforehand for study. As you're aware, this was a fairly tight program. Reaching into the interior was tough. Translation lagged somewhat behind, particularly into some of the indigenous languages, which are in any case mostly oral. There were some difficulties in terms of mechanisms for providing feedback from particularly interior communities who don't have access to the website and internet, and there was some complaint of slow uploading of critical comments on the LCDS website. There was felt to be insufficient highlighting of the fact that there was a multi-phased approach to the LCDS, so that this consultation wasn't the be-all and end-all, that there were still future opportunities to shape what happened in implementation. That wasn't felt to have been made sufficiently clear. There was some complaint about the abbreviated bullet point format of the reporting in official capturing of the consultation processes. People felt there should have been a little bit more verbose depth to the comments being captured. Academia were felt to have somewhat been overlooked in the consultation process. A lot of attention to the indigenous peoples in the interior and to the various groups I've described, but academia had some qualms. We felt that perhaps the use of trained independent facilitators in the consultations themselves would have enhanced the feel of those consultations and the ability to capture the information required. And we would certainly have benefited as an independent monitoring team from rapporteurs to help us in our work. There was a general lack of comprehension on the part of the Guyanese when the LCDS process started about RED and what environmental services were and what payment mechanisms might evolve. And also there was a need for a risk assessment for those groups who were unfamiliar with RED. So these are a list of what we felt were shortcomings of the process. But I don't want to leave this meeting with the feeling, with the list of shortcomings, because all processes of this type have shortcomings. Instead, I'd like to conclude with four points. My first point is largely based on an independent assessment of taxi drivers in Georgetown. Almost everyone in Guyana has heard about the low carbon development strategy. Almost everyone has an opinion on it. Some people are really quite articulate about their opinions of it. And I think that's a tribute to the consultation process. My perception from speaking with members in Guyana is that almost nobody disagrees with the benefits of the low carbon development strategy in principle. Some people have other reasons for wanting to see the LCDS fail, but I don't think it's based on what the LCDS is. As a model of consultation, we feel that Guyana's example has provided a sound and credible global model about which future consultative exercises in relation to RED could be based. And really, finally, the point is that the revision of and implementation of the revised low carbon development strategy will be the ultimate test of this consultation process, in line with some of the additions I've